I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia,
episode four.
I like even numbers.
Yes. And this week we have podcast OG and Atlas Obscura CEO David Plotz on the show.
And we like to call him Plotzy.
Yes, Plotzy.
And he was okay with it.
Yeah, somehow.
So we talk a lot about Atlas Obscura with him and how experiences and a media company are coming together.
Converging.
And creating audiences that I think people didn't even know existed.
Yeah, this whole idea of offline experience built from online discovery is one that we were super fascinated with and really excited to talk to David later in the show.
But first, we want to have a conversation about some of the things that have been happening with a lot of traditional publishers.
Yeah. So if you've been following Atlandia Podcast on Twitter, you'll notice a flurry of tweets over the last few weeks that have been focused on this convergence of legacy publishers. So in the news, Fox, Turner, and Viacom.
Exactly.
Who have come together to talk about the future of measurement as it relates to broadcast and presumably cable television, and saying that we as an industry need to challenge the way standards have been bought. You know, this is preceding this year's upfront, which will be interesting to see how the implications
how
and how people think about buying models when you've got three of the biggest broadcast cable networks standing up and saying, we know that our audiences are proliferating across technology. We know that viewing behaviors have changed.
And we also know that the whole person becomes a part that a brand and an advertiser want to get to, right?
And so you've got this interesting tension now happening where you've got a model that is quickly approaching later in the second quarter, which asks brands to commit dollars based on upfront ratings, old models. So now how do you ask advertisers to pay premium for a model you just profusely claimed is broken?
And by the way, on the same platforms that you've been using. So I think it's big media companies are going at audience in different ways. So you've got the Turner, Fox, Viacom relationship, and they're talking about, okay, we've got to take data. We've got to look at it across the networks, right? And have a different conversation about who the audience is and how we're going to reach them collectively.
Right. So you've got that model. You've got the scale game that others are playing with the convergence of NBC, Vox, and now Condé Nast coming to the table to reach a wider and presumably deeper audience pool that currently exists in their network.
So what does that totally mean? That means you can buy, right, across NBC, Vox, and we say Vox V.
VOX.
VOX.
Through the Condé portfolio. And totally get why NBC and Vox partnered in early days, right? NBC was looking to go younger, looking for new thought leadership, especially around people like Kara Swisher and Recode, and leaning into
which
those
really smart
micro communities or subcultures.
Yeah.
And then Condé came to the table. And when Condé came to the table, it set off that red flag.
We call it the flare. It was like that. Well, we describe it as the flare going off.
Cam, we're looking for a sound effect for the flare. And when that happened, right, it's confusion because Condé Nast presumably has the quality of content.
But are they really pulling the audience?
Are they pulling the audience? And then are you competing with Vox? You're both going down very niche paths. So that one is a really interesting one and one we need to watch because it signals a couple of things to me and I'm not sure what direction it's going in. I don't know what you think about it.
On the other side, the Viacom, Fox, and Turner, I find that one to be more interesting because they were the first major networks to say, we have to think about this differently. And we recognize that audiences aren't just made up of simple age, sex, and location demographics, right? That we've got
We are far past the AOL generation.
We are far past the AOL generation. We've got to market to the whole person.
Right.
And so I think that one is more interesting about, listen, we know that we have got this audience, but we're going to get really fucking smart about who they are, right?
Totally agree. Amen, sister.
Peace. David Plotz
will see you soon.
Coming up next, talking about audience and building experiences within a media company.
We'll be right back. So welcome back, everybody, to Atlantia. We are so excited to have the OG of podcasting, David Plotz, in the house.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
And I just have to say, OG of podcasting with GabFest, you are co-host of Political GabFest, correct?
I am. We've been doing it since the year the word podcast was coined. We have been podcasting that long.
But you didn't coin it.
A very long time. Didn't coin it, no.
But you could have.
Definitely would have coined it had someone else not beaten me to it.
So you become kind of an unofficial mentor to us, and we'll talk about that because I think that's really interesting about podcasting in general and some of the advice you've given us, if that's cool.
Happily. Yes.
Yeah, emoji prayer hands is our sign of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you. But I think first we got to know you when you were at Slate. You were the editor-in-chief at Slate, and now you are on the business side. You're the CEO of Atlas Obscura, a new media company, right, that is really blending experience and media together.
Yes, that is extremely well put. So in 2014, I took over what was a beautiful little venture that had been started by Joshua Foer and Dylan Thuris. And they had created this site called Atlas Obscura, which is where people could share knowledge of the world's unusual places. So like the secret apartment at the top of the Eiffel Tower or the
spelunking in New York City subways.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes, spelunking in New York City subways. Or do you know if you take the 6 train past the end, you can take it past the end and you keep going.
Like
they
legally?
They won't kick you off because it goes and does a turnaround. You can stay on it and you go into this abandoned City Hall station, which is this beautiful station that was built in the early 20th century. It's gorgeous. It's lit. And you can just get a glance of it as you just
go
by.
So the next podcast, we're going on the 6th.
I actually think we go on the 6th. We do a record if we can. Is that considered spelunking if you go on a subway?
No, spelunking. I think you got
to climb. You got to climb in.
Yeah.
We could do that too.
I don't know if you want to see me climbing on the 6th.
Do not encourage your listeners to spelunk. Nobody spelunk. There's
nobody spelunk. But Atlas is talking about the unknown travel and treasures.
And the
right?
idea that Dylan and Josh had was that we're all explorers, that everyone's an explorer. You might not know it, you're an explorer, but around the corner from you is something that is going to surprise you and it's going to delight you and amaze you. And we're going to give you that experience digitally. So we created this huge compendium, or rather our users created this huge compendium of these unusual places around the world. That's part of it. But also we created experiences for people so that you can come with us and go hike to the secret fort in the middle of Rock Creek Park in Washington, D.C., or come do a falconry workshop in the desert with us.
What is a falconry workshop?
You get to like hunt with a falcon.
No way.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That will really take me outside my comfort zone.
My favorite thing that we did at Atlas since I've been there, well, there's so many things, but one is that we took over this bar in Greenpoint one night. So it was had about 75 people in this bar at Broken Land.
You like kicked out all the hipsters and brought your own in.
We brought our own hipsters.
Bring your own.
Bring your own.
Bring your own.
I love it.
It was the hipsters paid us to be there, and we brought a wolf to the bar. And so the door opened. Everyone realized, oh, this is when the wolf comes. And the bar went totally dead silent. And then you hear, I can't reenact it, but the clatter of these wolf claws on the wooden floor. It was incredible.
One of the cool things you've talked to us a bit about is how you've kind of went at this idea of the problem of building brand in the modern media world. You talk about how Google and Facebook own your audience, and it's very difficult for you to kind of go and do things cost effectively.
Right. I think one of the things that you guys, I'm sure, experience like all the time is that if you're a media site, and you think you have an audience, but really your audience is coming to you because someone has sent them a Facebook link, or they maybe saw you on Snapchat Discover, that the platform owns your audience. You don't own your audience. Your audience doesn't necessarily know who you are. They follow the link and they see your story and you get to count them as someone who's seen you, but they don't really know who you are. And I think one of that's a very deadly position to be in, because all of a sudden these people who you think are connected to you the way a newspaper subscriber used to be connected to the newspaper that they paid for, they're not connected to you. They don't care. They don't really know.
You were just a flip in the feed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I haven't used that. That's a good expression. Yeah. And so our premise is that if we can build genuine like community and genuine sort of real experiences for people, that we can then create a brand that actually has meaning for them.
And people are coming, so like your community, right, of readers, or I don't even know what you call them, like explorers, right, are contributing to the events, contributing to some of the like local points that you guys are talking about. Yeah. Do you recruit them? Do they just talk to you guys and say, hey, this is something that's really cool? Like, how do you guys find those people?
Well, it depends. Some of them find us. They're in every town, there's somebody who knows, like, here's the weird history, or here's the house that Al Capone lived in for 7 years when he was a kid, or whatever particular thing it is. There's always someone in town who knows it. And sometimes they have an outlet, but often they don't have an outlet. So they stumble across us and then they start to contribute. There's this kid, I shouldn't call him a kid, he's a full-grown adult in Washington, named Elliot Carter, who knows more about Washington, D.C. and its distinctive history than anybody. And he kind of found me, and say, I took him out to coffee one day, and here's this person. Now, every time I turn around, he's like pointed out some other incredible thing. There's this, like, do you know the U.S. Constitution is at the National Archives? Mm. And every night, so you can go see it. I don't know if you've ever seen it, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Yeah. And every night, there's this mechanism, this elevator that lowers it into a safe in the ground.
I lived in D.C. I can tell you my tours of D.C. are different than finding the Constitution. I was there for college.
Oh, yeah. They're bars. They're useful bars. Yes. Bars with great history, too.
Yes, there's amazing bars.
I love this idea of modern folklore. I was actually on the train the other day going home to Connecticut, and I was on Atlas Obscura's website. And it immediately geolocated me and was like, here are things in Connecticut. And there were things, like, I'm like, oh, I live in Stamford, Connecticut. Ho-hum. There were some really cool things that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Like, how do brands, because I think something that we've talked a lot about, Laura and I have talked a lot about, is this idea of local community becoming more important, especially post-election. Like, what's happening in your local community? Do you really know? Who are the voices? Who are the people? You know, how do brands start tapping into something that Atlas Obscura is doing in certain communities that are important to them?
That's a really good question. Let me think about that. I think one way is, in now, and I think 8 U.S. cities, we have what are called Atlas Obscura societies. And these are local organizations, and they're run by somebody who works for us, usually on a part-time basis. And every week, they're putting together local experiences. So in Washington, D.C., I noticed that we were going to do a tasting of George Washington's whiskey. And so there'll be a whiskey tasting down in Mount Vernon.
That's like getting to know the a totally different side of the president.
Huge. He was a huge distiller.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Somewhere my boyfriend is putting in next trip.
Washington, D.C.
George Washington's whiskey. Yeah.
Well, so that's one way a brand could engage.
Totally. Yeah.
Right?
Well, we've been doing these trips.
Doers, if you're listening. Yeah. Johnny Walker, if you're listening.
Yeah. Like a historic whiskey tour be amazing. There's all this kind of great whiskey history through Appalachia and Kentucky. You could do so much cool stuff.
So, David, when you talk a lot about, you know, these new ways of curating experiences and this blend of what we call like mixed reality, right? You've got the offline thing happening. You've got the online curation of editorial. One of the interesting lines I've heard of late came from Jed Hartman, the CRO of Washington Post. He said to us, you know, we're at a time when you're always one click away from somebody never coming back to your site. And in a space where you're playing in a world that's blurred, how are you gauging the effectiveness and success of Atlas Obscura? What does that look like?
Well, we're in a lot of different lines of businesses. So we have published a book. We, you know, are piloting podcasts. We do digital media. We do events. We do international trips. So there are a lot of different ways we can measure success. Mm-hmm. I think, like most people, we look at the kind of top line audience number, but that is not sufficient. I mean, that's sort of just like you get a Reddit spike and all of a sudden your top line audience number looks great. So we are trying to, and I could use some advice. I mean, we're trying to get some kind of measurement which kind of combines the durability of time on site with like user action around events and, you know, buying things from us. But because we're a young brand, that's all, it's all kind of a crap.
I think one of the things
I went off earlier about this, I was like, I want to talk to David about this. I want to say, like, why even have a website today? And I think that that's an interesting question for you. And then let's take it further. Like, I think that you guys are well positioned to do something totally different in terms of how content comes to life via experience and only have that be the centerpiece.
You just position Atlas Obscura as a parent company that's a collective of different revenue streams, right? And different platforms that exist, which kudos to you, because I think a lot of brands are trying to figure out how they go off platform. And so I think you have an advantage there. But the other
side is website. It's like go off of .com.
But the other part that's interesting is also to your advantage is you don't have audience, you have explorers. So to me, the fact that people can go deep and they're not there to just click on an article and keep moving, they're there to immerse themselves in experience and potentially then go on one. To me, things like conversion rate to experience or
you're a lot closer.
A depth of exploration is more intriguing to me as a marketer.
Yeah. That's the kind of, we don't have a great CRM tool, but that's what we need is to figure that out. Because right now we know how many people went to events. We know how many people bought the book. We know how many people are going on trips. We know how many people are at the website, but we don't know how one gets to the other.
Yeah, and linking those things.
But I wanted actually just to dig into that, into the kind of website question is like, why have a website? So one of the things I think why Atlas Obscura in particular has a website is that so much of what we do is actually created by our users. So the entire Atlas, this compendium of places, which is much of what we do online, users started all of that. They contributed all of that. And we had this amazing moment so we published a book this fall.
Which, by the way, gets crazy reviews crazy reviews. Lena Dunham, like tons of people have said this reinvented what travel should be.
Yeah, it's a pretty...
That's a glowing endorsement.
It's a good book.
I'm not quoting her. I'm just saying that there are so many people who have said to that effect... That's what this is.
Right. I think Lena's actual line was, this is the only thing that makes me get out of my house, which I love. But so that book was a bestseller before it came out because we pre-sold, we told our audience about it. We told the people on the website, pre-order this book. This is a book that our users had written. The things that are in the book are things that they contributed. Mm. They bought a book that they had written.
Do you start doing a rev stream with them?
We should start doing.
Well,
no, the rev stream is that we put out a beautiful book and that we made it useful and that we are giving them, you know, we're doing events with them. I mean, we are constantly looking for ways to give them these rich experiences. But there is a sort of virtuous cycle, and the web is an important part of it because the web is the place we give them to contribute content.
Do you think that adds to your credibility? It's like this buy me for me sort of model in that there's many travel mags and sites and destinations that
and
exist.
Talent and
I mean, everything from Airbnb having the potential to become a content platform to travel and leisure.
So the user content is a key part of it, but one, we have to edit it, so it needs to be improved, so it needs editing. And the other is that we supplement it with professional content and stories that we can go out and find, which have made the audience still bigger and made, you know, people want to sign up for emails, and it creates a whole new richness to what we're doing. So I think
the balance.
It's a balance. I mean, it does mean our cost of content production is lower than it would be if we were a pure professional journalism play, and that's a good position to be in. But I think we need both pieces.
You know what I want to see? I want to see Atlas Obscura have the ability to go from see this cool thing and do it now, like right now. Like if I was Foursquare, I'd buy Atlas Obscura.
Are you listening for
it? I mean, that's really what first. That's actually really what they need, right? Yeah. And that's what they should have become.
Airbnb. I mean, they talk about that too.
Yeah,
but I think Airbnb would swallow Atlas Obscura up and make it something that it's not. What I think that you guys could do is have this immediate, like, I want to do this now. I want to go see a show now, underground this. I want to take the 6 train now. I want to do this now. I want to buy the ticket now. And I think, like, on-demand experience is really the next kind of step in also in commerce, having commerce and experience come together for this, like, amazing,
really great idea.
Are you writing
it down?
He's writing it down.
So don't worry, it's recorded.
We had a kind of like a very beta, extremely like so beta, we barely let it out, thing called, we called missions, which was, we tried to do that, which was, it wasn't just, here's a place. It was, here's something you can go do now.
Do you know how many people say all the time, like, I'm bored? Do you know how many friends,
times do I say that to you a day?
Tons. If something stopped you in the middle of your tracks and said, you can go do this now, here are eight things that you can go do now.
Yes. Yeah. That's an extremely good idea.
Well, that's why we do what we do.
So in this shared economy, I mean, do you think that the Atlas Obscura model leans into this shared economy? Obviously, we have shared services like Uber, the Airbnbs of the world, et cetera. We actually, from a colleague, just learned of this new app called Cool Cousin. Are you familiar with
them? Have you heard of Cool Cousin?
Yeah.
So similar to what you're doing, but more from a host and guide standpoint versus like actually immersing yourself and unpacking
it's like an expert down a certain vertical. So like one of our colleagues is a food. He's like the foodie of New York City. So that's what he he does, you know.
So how do you see Atlas Obscura playing in the shared economy? Do you think it gets to a place where you can exchange experiences for non-transactional things? Or
can you see like some of your contributors actually
bartering experiences,
right? Exactly. Creating their own revenue streams off of Atlas Obscura.
There was a great an example of that, which is that we did an event last year. We have this thing called Obscura Day, which is on May 6th. Mark your calendars. On May 6th.
Writing it down.
All over the world, it's our International Day of Exploration. So we do 200 events all over the world on that day. And one of the ones we did in New York last year was this person who actually in their apartment has all these Victorian electronics. So I guess during the 19th century, there was, you know, they had electronics. It was early electronics.
Sure,
and this
person
has this collection and demonstrated all this stuff in their apartment. And it was this idea that there's kind of people with secret knowledge and secret expertise, and they want to share it. And we give a platform to as many of them as possible. But I like the idea that people can start to do it themselves, create it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a whole sub revenue stream then of people kind of branching off and then becoming their own sort of
like self-organizing.
Explorer or Obscura evangelist, I guess, that can create those
models. I see a huge partnership with you and Meetup, with Atlas Obscura and Meetup, to be able to do something like this.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing.
I mean, the potential for brands to
write
use you is like totally unlimited in that there are so many ways. So like when you talk about International, you know, Explorers Day, like are brands like Patagonia and GoPro reaching out to you to integrate their products in ways that are actually tangible and useful in an experience versus just badging that day?
We should. They should. They should be listening.
By badging, she means like slap a logo on it.
Right.
So I'm just curious to get your take, having been in this world for a couple years, like what are people most interested in travel? Like how has it evolved with technology and the sort of platform you've created? Has it shaped it?
Yeah, I think people are really interested in kind of off the beaten track experiences. And some of it actually I think is slightly one-upmanship. There's a lot of like, I've been there, look at my Instagram, look where I've been
totally
and you haven't been there. And so part of it I don't like, but part of it is the sense that that thanks to technology, thanks to you know, improved travel, you can now get to places where you couldn't get before. And it's a genuine curiosity of saying like, well, it used to be that everyone thought I've got to see the Eiffel Tower and the Tower of London and
Mona Lisa
before I die. And now people, I think people.
You could see that through a digital, virtual, et cetera experience.
They don't care. And like going to see the Mona Lisa is awful. It's a terrible experience. It's super crowded.
Have you been there? It's terrible.
And you know that if you had an alternative experience in like some weird place outside of Paris, it would be a better experience. So I think people are looking for things that are more bespoke and unusual.
Things that you can't typically get access to, I feel like, is something that is more valued these days than, to your point, the mainstream tourist stops.
Right. I think that's exactly right. And also, one of the things that's happening is that because of Asia's getting so rich, there are these
wealthy.
Yeah. So there are tons of, there have been tons of Japanese tourists, but now Korean and Chinese tourists who are in Europe. And so it's like there's just a lot more tourists in places where there have been fewer tourists. And so there's a spill-on effect where people who who have tourist experience are looking for really unusual and different places to go. And that we think is a huge opportunity. And like, you know, and people sometimes say like, well, you have Atlas Obscura, aren't you worried that all these weird places are going to be ruined? And our view is like, no. Like,
ruined because of what?
Because suddenly people are going to find them. Mm. And it's actually much, much more the case that what happens is that places that don't get visited die. They get abandoned, forgotten, and disappear. And what you want is actually for these places, these wonderful, weird places, to be celebrated and found.
Did you guys ever cover, this is totally random, but I was obsessed with this. So remember Finding Sugarman? Did you remember that? Yeah.
At the musician.
In right? Detroit. But I was like really obsessed with Detroit culture because of Finding Sugarman and like just all the stuff that was happening. This is the time with like the Chrysler comeback and like all of these things.
I've just moved into brainstorm mode because you do this to me. So what Alexa just described, I think, is an amazing product opportunity. And it's, how does Atlas Obscura move into the search bar of experiences?
That's right.
So when Alexa thinks about finding Sugarman,
that phrase,
and I think about finding Tony Soprano, what are the experiences that I can go in and ask Atlas Obscura to curate for me to go after that? And I think that is the quintessential moment of digital and discovery and search linking up with real world on-demand experiences that I can go do tomorrow.
That's where I was saying, like, the whole Foursquare thing. I was like, oh, if I'm right here, what can I do right now? But I love the, like, search bar for experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's really... we just gave you a new tagline.
Search bar for experiences.
I mean, I think that's really, in a lot of ways, if I said I want to see Atlas Obscura become something, I'd say you become that.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you're infusing technology to that point? So like, you are 11 years in the making, a podcast star in and of your own right. How are things like audio and other forms of things like augmented reality, artificial intelligence playing into the experience world? Because Alexa and I are bracing for this time in our industry where the interface is going away.
Right.
And so you are poised to be at the forefront of that. What does technology look like in your world?
I mean, there's a couple of AR apps that we've talked to, and we think there's like a great, you know, whatever the Pokemon Go is for adults around history and experience to replace. There are some apps that we've looked at that seem really cool that look at sort of historical experience and allow you to kind of place yourself in places. If you have a good idea for that, we'd be glad to.
So you know what I want to go into a little bit? You said the founders said that everyone's got an explorer in them. I would argue that that's not true. I would argue that people generally are...
My mother's lived in the same place for almost 60 years.
My grandmother was the same way. Like, my parents, very similar. But I would argue it's not true unless engaged in the right way. And I would love to know, right now, when you look at your audience, who are they?
Well...
do you want to argue? You're going to say, I think you're wrong.
No, I mean, I've lived all my life in Washington, D.C. I grew up there. And I still every month, I discover something surprising about this place, which I know intimately. I mean, the reason I ended up working at Atlas Obscura, taking this job, was I had left Slate and I was just looking around. I went for a bike ride with my daughter down in a part of Washington I never really spent much time in. I saw there was a bike path in Anacostia, which is a poorer part of the city. And so we went on this bike path. And I noticed as we were on this path, which was kind of like a crummy path, it wasn't that fun a bike ride, honestly, but that everything we passed, we went through Fort DuPont Park and Fort Mahan Park and Fort Wallace Park. And I was like, why is everything called Fort? And so I went back home and I was like, why is everything called Fort? And I looked, and if you put your finger on the Capitol and then sort of draw a circle around Washington, maybe 3 or 4 miles from the Capitol, everything's called Fort. There's Fort Totten, Fort Stevens, Battery Kimball. And it's like, oh, these are the Civil War defenses of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, totally.
But there's no forts there. It's like all gone, except there's one spot. And so a couple weeks later, I went out for a walk with my family in the woods up a mile from where I grew up, off a very busy street, off the corner of Military Road and Oregon Avenue. You walk into the woods, into Rock Creek Park. You're in deep woods. You go a couple hundred yards, and there's a tiny little path off to the right. You take this tiny little path off to the right, off to the left, actually. And you go another 50 yards into the deep forest. All of a sudden, there's a moat, and then there's these earthen walls that are 20 feet high. And you climb up in these earthen walls, and you realize, oh, this is a ring.
Whoa.
And this is Fort DeRussy. This is like a fort. It's in the middle of the fucking city, like right where I grew up. And it's just this incredible place. And it turns out it has an amazing history. It's where, you know, there was a very important battle fought that fended off a Confederate invasion in 1864. Very little talked about, but important battle. But nobody knows it. Nobody experiences it. So I think even access, your grandmothers or
what you just said is totally inspired. This thought in my head as you're talking is like the furthest my mother has explored is the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. And I say that in all sincerity.
In a loving way. That's not a bad thing.
And it's not a bad thing, but creature of habit, 60 years, same town, born and raised, raised her family there, continues to live there. How can brands help reach the fruit on the tree that is not low-hanging, mm-hmm. which are people like her who don't necessarily have the ambition or maybe the financial means or whatever the case may be to go to see the Mona Lisa, but can get out in their neighborhoods and find forts.
And feel, and you know what happens? What did you feel when you discovered this? It was like, fuck yeah!
Yes, it's literally right? Fuck yeah. And I now take groups to this fort because it's so fun. And people are like, holy cow.
I'm seeing a next show.
But we want Barb, Laura's mom, to go, fuck yeah!
But see, the other thing is that Barb may know. So the other piece of it is, like you asked to the audiences, and I think the audience is people who are passionate about things in that sense of, like, they are enthusiasts. And I bet that Barb has, like, she has some deep knowledge of some aspect of her world and her community. There's somebody whose history she knows or some place that she knows just intimately. Right. And as much as we are about people traveling to the farthest flung and, like, having some like distant remote experience, we're also about people like connecting deeply to any place. Like you can connect deeply to the place that
you are.
Well,
that's where brands play the role.
So we're like wagging our fingers right now because that right there to me.
Brands, local communities.
Brands, local communities, and making people have a sense of life and a sense of like excitement.
Pride.
And pride.
Yeah.
Right? That they didn't know even existed.
Yeah.
That to me is like amazingly exciting.
Yeah.
So let's pivot into David Plotz, the podcaster.
And can we just call you Plotzy?
Plotzy. One of many nicknames. That's the least awful of the many nicknames.
Okay, good.
We'll go with that. And talk to us a little bit about 11 years in the making as a podcaster, what you've seen this industry become and what you're excited about or not excited about.
I mean, I'm incredibly excited about it. I love podcasting. I just love it. It's one of the things when I was at Slate, Andy Bowers, who you guys know and work with, and Andy created this podcasting world in Slate. No one knew what podcasting was. I mean, it was literally the year that podcasting was invented, and Andy saying, this is the future, you got to try this. And we didn't know. We were like, sure, whatever, Andy. Yeah, fine. Yeah. But he was so absolutely right and prophetic about it. And so to me, what I love and what I think is profound about it is that it is the most intimate medium. It is a medium where when you hear someone's voice in your ears, and when you hear someone's voice in your earbuds, it's not even ambiently. Like when you listen to the radio, it tends to be sort of ambient around you. But with the earbuds, first of all, you've made an explicit choice to listen. Like you can't not opt into a podcast. You have opted to listen to it.
And with the Plotzy voice, I mean, how could you not opt in?
I mean,
in?
You actually just made me want to go like,
And then it's right in your ears. And it creates this intimacy. And television is a distancing medium. Print, you don't make this human connection with people because it's whoever writes it. It's like just, you know, whatever. And digital is ephemera. Digital is flashing across so quickly. Podcasting is unbelievably intimate. And therefore, you have human connections with people. I don't know if this is started to happen to you guys yet, but you're going to meet people who know you because they listen to you and they hear your voice and they'll hear you and they'll be like, oh, it's Laura. And not because you know anything about them, but they know you and they've connected you. And that is a powerful connection. That's why the ad rates are so high.
Can I ask you a quick, can we ask you one last thing? So we have this series, and this was actually a piece of your advice. And after we talked, I was like, oh my God, Laura, we got to bring it back. So there's this You remember, have you ever heard of the game? I feel like you're too intellectual.
Fuck, marry, kill.
Yeah, kill, fuck, marry. But yeah, we like.
Really?
It. Yeah, it just That's rolls the off the tongue.
No,
better.
It's fuck, marry, kill.
Maybe Cam, is it fuck? Yeah, well, Cam says fuck, marry, kill. We say kill, fuck, marry,
and it's our show, so it's
okay,
kill, fuck, marry.
My wife and I played an hour long game of
the other night.
We were going to a concert. We were just like, it was so much fun.
Okay, so we're gonna do that though for marketing, brands, technology, media with
okay.
you.
Okay,
so it's kill. What would you kill? What would you just get rid of? What would you strike from the earth, David Plotz? What would you do yourself? Right? And what would you buy?
I mean, I would definitely kill Facebook.
Okay.
Definitely.
Like, okay.
Facebook was dead.
Okay.
When we've talked a lot on this podcast about sort of real experiences. I think Facebook is the champion of separating you from real experience. It like creates pretend experience where there should be real experience. And it also has had this dire effect, I think, on journalism and media.
Okay. I buy that.
All right. What would I...
would you buy?
What would I buy? I would buy... This American Life. I think okay. This American Life does what it does better than anything. It has created, we are all children of This American Life in the way that we're almost children of nothing else. I think it's created how we do stories, how we think about stories, how we listen to stories more than anything. So
I would agree. That's an awesome answer and would agree with you. And I
so
think
Ira,
about,
call Plotzy if you want to make a deal.
To be bought. and then he could buy me, actually.
It's
and
true.
Then what would I do?
Buy all of us.
What would you do yourself because you could do it better?
What would I do myself because I would do it better is American soccer. Like, I'm a huge soccer fan.
Ah,
I'm just so disappointed.
You just hit a pash point of Miss Laura Carenti over here.
I played soccer at American University in
did
Washington,
you really?
D.C. I did.
You went to AU and played for them?
One's an eagle, always an eagle.
Wow.
What would you do differently about American soccer?
Well, it's just, there's a huge fan base. There's a huge participation. There's an enormous love for the game, and yet the quality of the league and of the national of the MLS and of the national team continues to be low.
I think that is a huge issue with the MLS organization. You have a Hispanic Latino community that turns out for international games more than they do their own home team. The league does not understand how to put the right folks in marketing in these pockets of communities that truly understand them. So I could go on about that forever.
I love it.
But anyway, David Plotz.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
It was super fun.
If you haven't already, please go check out Atlas Obscura.
We're expecting a lot from Atlas Obscura. I hope you know. I mean, I saw you break out the iPhone with some ideas that we wrote down. We want to come and see these happen.
So David, how can people get in touch with you if they have more interesting experiences or ideas they want to share with you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at David Plotz, and I'm also David at atlasobscura.com.
Awesome.
David
Thank
Plotz,
you.
Everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
That wraps this week's episode of Atlandia. A few people we need to thank.
Cameron Drews, our producer.
Laura Mayer, Matt Turk, Andy Bowers, and our team at Panoply.
Thanks very much. Thanks for listening. Tweet us at Adlandia Podcast.
Like us, leave us a review, send us your thoughts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.